From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Don Day will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way today, we'll update crop conditions in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa. We'll hear those reports from the state statisticians in each of those regions, and then we'll hear the agricultural news and a bit more about the waters of the U.S. rule, otherwise known as WOTUS. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana now joins us. Hey, Wayne, it looks like it was a pretty quiet day at the CME Group in Chicago.
It was. We started off a little easier. We bumped up a little bit, made a little bit to run to the top side. But the beans started. They pushed their run down to 851 and seemed to bounce off that and find a little strength in buying there. We continue to see the crush margin narrow just a little bit. It was down 7.5 cents, but still at $1.43, and that's it's good profit, so they're wanting to buy beans.
What are we hearing about bean harvest? Is it moving quickly, especially in the Western Corn Belt? Are there quality problems? Are there things that can be supportive in this marketplace, or are we just still harvesting a really good-sized crop?
Well, I think every one of those things could be said true out there. We're moving along. We were at 53% harvested on the report yesterday. That was a little higher than what they thought it might be. We're seeing harvest here in the central U.S. or the eastern Midwest going along really fast. You know, we're behind in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska that way, South Dakota. So we are moving slower out there. We are having some damage, definitely in the Mid-South, some through parts of Indiana, and it seems to be sort of located, and it seems to be more variety-specific that they're having some problems. Certain varieties seem to have had a real problem. We've had a couple of things where the stink bugs have come in and caused smaller beans, discoloration to beans, and then actually some pod snapping or fracturing that way, and the beans just laying on the ground before the combine gets there. So we've seen some of the problems like that in the Mid-South, down around the Memphis area, a lot of 8 to 10% damaged beans.
Enough to manage to give the boost to the marketplace, or just enough to be annoying?
Well, I think that it depends on where you're at. It's very annoying to the person that's taking that dollar dock for some of these beans and some that they're not taking in some areas. I think this could trim the bean bush. It could trim things back maybe a bushel or so, but we're still having an awfully good crop as in general as we look at it as the total. But some areas are it's very much annoying. They're even talking in some areas they wouldn't be deliverable quality for the Board of Trade if they were to think about delivering them. And there's a lot of talk that we could try to see some convergence between the cash and the basis from big deliveries here at the end of the month.
Yeah, for corn, what are we hearing about yields across the Midwest?
They're still good, Todd. They're, a lot of guys are telling us it's the best corn crop they've ever had. Most everybody has a yield that's better than what they've ever had, at least in one field, if not across the board. We are seeing some craziness, though, in the response that from field to field might be 30 bushels difference just in the variety that was planted in it. And it might have been a real good variety last year, and this year it seems to not be the one that hit. But still, they'd be happy with the yield that they're in that one that's 20 to 30 bushel less if it was last year or any other year, but it could still be a lot of difference in it. But all in all, the corn crop is big.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released its weekly crop progress report. It shows 49% of the corn crop around the nation has now been harvested. 47% is the rolling five-year average. 53% of the soybeans are in the bin. 63% is the rolling five-year average. The condition of that crop, by the way, is 48% good and 18% excellent. That's the same as last week. And last year, the condition was 48% good, 13%. Excellent. Now, here are the state statisticians with a look at their regions. We'll start with Illinois.
This is Steve Malaszewski, Deputy Director for the Heartland Regional Field Office with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures for the week averaged 44.6 degrees, nearly 9 degrees below normal. Rainfall for the state averaged 0.22 inches, which was half an inch below normal. There were 5 days suitable for field work last week. Topsoil moisture was rated 1% very short, 5% short, 86% adequate, and 8% surplus. Corn harvest was 82% complete, compared to 60% 1 year ago and 66% for the 5 year average. Soybean harvest was 74% complete, compared to 75% last year and 70% for the 5 year average. 53% of the winter wheat crop has been planted, compared to 67% this time last year and 60% for the 5 year average. Winter wheat emerged reached 29%. Pasture conditions were rated 7% very poor to poor, 37% fair, and 56% good to excellent. This has been Steve Malaszewski with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office. Sunshine and a break from substantial precipitation got Iowa farmers back in the fields with 4.4 days suitable for field work last week. Activities for the week included harvesting corn and soybeans, baling stalks, and planting cover crops. Topsoil moisture levels rated 0% very short, 0% short, 65% adequate, and 35% surplus. 29% of the state's corn for grain crop has been harvested, 3 days ahead of last year, but 4 days behind the 5 year average. Farmers in southeast Iowa have neared the halfway point of corn for grain harvest, while farmers in the northeast have not yet harvested 1/5 of their corn for grain crop. Moisture content of field corn being harvested was at 19%. Corn condition rated 68% good to excellent. Soybean harvest was 37% complete, 12 days behind the average. This is the smallest percentage of the soybean crop harvested by October 21st since 1985. Soybean condition rated 65% good to excellent. Pasture conditions rated 55% good to excellent. Pastures have responded well to recent precipitation and cool temperatures. Cattle lots are still muddy, but improving. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest
Stephen
Region
Dosage
Field Office,
the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Above average rainfall on already saturated fields slowed harvest progress. Significant midweek rain events kept farmers out of the fields for much of the week, particularly in the north. As temperatures fell, the northern part of the state also reported the first instances of frost for the season. There were 3.9 days available for field work for the week ending October 14th. Growers made progress on corn and soybean harvests, where weather permitted, with reports of pest damage to the soybean crop in some fields. Livestock were reported to be in good condition, aided by pasture growth due to frequent rains. Winter wheat planting continued where time and conditions allowed. Other activities for the week included taking soil samples, spreading fertilizer, fall tillage, and drying and hauling grain to elevators. This is Stephen Dothage reporting.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their updates of weekly crop progress across the Midwest. Now up next, agricultural news. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue will help President Donald Trump reach his goal of reducing agency budgets by 5% next year. Perdue has promised to cut his budget 5%, as last week Trump asked every cabinet agency except the Pentagon to make a 5% cut. During the meeting, Trump told the leaders to get rid of the fat, get rid of the waste. A Department of Agriculture spokesman said USDA stands with the president and his goal of being fiscally responsible with taxpayer dollars and will absolutely meet his target. Perdue said following the meeting that USDA would participate in the Trump plan and that he thinks USDA will be able to meet greater than 5%. The 5% announcement followed reports that the government's budget deficit has reached a 6-year high. Well, one of those cost-cutting measures could be something Perdue has already discussed. That's moving some of the agency's assets out of Washington, D.C. The Department of Agriculture says more than 130 cities have expressed interest in hosting USDA agencies that would move from Washington as part of a controversial reorganization plan. USDA says 136 entities in 35 states are interested in becoming the new homes of the Economic Research Service and the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. In August, Secretary Perdue announced that most ERS and NIFA personnel would be moving to outside the Washington area by the end of 2019 and invited interested parties to submit proposals. Let's switch to livestock now, where the European Union last week agreed to allow negotiations with the U.S. to increase imports of U.S. beef to the EU. The move could help ease some transatlantic trade tensions that, according to Reuters, which reports the EU says finding a mutually beneficial solution to our long-standing dispute over beef would be a major step forward in improving trade cooperation. The European Commission, which negotiates on behalf of the 28 EU nations, said it would be open to formal talks in the coming days. One other note on livestock and policy. Japanese officials stopped a traveler with luggage from China bound for Japan because of pork in his suitcase that later tested positive for African swine fever. Japan's agriculture ministry announced the finding Monday of sausages in a passenger's luggage that tested positive for the disease. African swine fever is a highly contagious disease spreading across China and other nations. The case in Japan is the first in the nation, and agriculture officials say there are no domestic cases of infections in Japan. The passenger arriving on October 1st from Beijing was found to have about 1.5 kilograms of sausage, which are prohibited from being brought into that nation. This is the very same reason that airports and other points of entrance into the United States do not allow you to carry food and or plant materials from outside of the U.S. into the United States. Let's stay with meat for a moment. There are scores of regulatory issues being opened up by the cultured meat products being developed. Stakeholders in these products are in Washington this week to talk about those issues. Gary Crawford has more from USDA.
Here at Agriculture Department headquarters in Washington this week.
What we're trying to accomplish here today is to frame how the new technology of cell cultured meat is regulated by the federal government.
Throughout this process, FDA is committed to working with USDA and with you to determine the most effective regulatory oversight framework for these novel products.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb opening up 2 days of meetings here with hundreds of people with a stake in that fast-approaching new food technology of growing meat products in labs from cells. These new products may be ready for the market in a year or two, and so developers will need ahead of time all of the safety and inspection rules and regulations, rules that Sonny Perdue said should be
clear, concise, and easily to be complied with.
But regulatory efficiencies won't come at the expense of consumer safety.
Lots of issues to be decided here. One big one, as far as livestock producers are concerned, is what to call these new products. Should they even be called meat? In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And finally today, coming closer to home here, farm income this year, once the market facilitation program payments are thrown in, looks to be about average. However, next year is a much bigger problem, says Gary Schnitke from the U of I, one that farmers and landowners need to tackle when they set cash rents.
Flexibility is a key. I would suggest lowering cash rents if at all possible. And, you know, there's always this possibility that things change, right? That something miraculous happens and we get back to 950 soybean prices, or we have another market facilitation program payment next year, so building in a variable cash rent might be a good thing for next year.
If you'd like to explore possible variable cash rent agreements, you can find examples online. Search Google for variable cash rent lease examples, and then click on the FarmDoc PDF file. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. You can buy your tickets at either place for the November 20th conference. Do that right now. Don't wait. Should be a great event in Normal, Illinois, the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. Up next, a bit more on WOTUS. That's the waters of the U.S. Well, American Farm Bureau Federation official says a nationwide court decision on the Obama-era Waters of the U.S. rule, otherwise known as WOTUS, that regulates vast tracts of ditches and other land features nationwide could come in a matter of weeks. Farm Bureau's Don Parrish says federal court decisions in North Dakota or two other states could answer WOTUS's fate in 22 states where the sweeping water regulations are still in force.
In Georgia, we've just asked for a preliminary temporary injunction, and we've asked that judge down there to do it nationwide. We expect that judge to move probably in the next couple of weeks. The South Texas court, that judge has promised to move the litigation in an expedited fashion, and we have filed our briefs for summary judgment last week, and we could hear something really right after the first of the year in all three of these cases.
Parrish, meantime, says it doesn't appear the Trump EPA or Army Corps are enforcing WOTUS in those states where a South Carolina federal court has ruled it must still be carried out.
We have not heard of any specific enforcement actions being taken as a result of implementation of the 2015 rule. I think most Corps staff that are having to implement this understand that this rule is short-lived. It's going to go away one way or the other. Either the courts are going to find it illegal, or this administration is going to finalize a rule that repeals it.
He says that process is expected to move ahead soon.
Well, we're very hopeful that step two, the replacement rule, is going to be ready and through the interagency review process very soon. We're hoping sometime around the 1st of November is when we'll see an opportunity to comment on a new regulation as that defines waters of the U.S.
Until then, Farm Bureau and a coalition of business groups and states hope that the courts find WOTUS either wrong in interpreting the Clean Water Act's definition of navigable waters or unconstitutional in its overreach of federal authority. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Have you purchased those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference? It's not very far away, the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 20th day of November in Normal, Illinois. And we have a great lineup for you. If you've been thinking about, hey, what am I going to do with the farm over the next 5 to 10 years to make sure that it stays in really good financial condition? Well, we've got some opportunities potentially, or at least ways for you to explore. Anheuser-Busch and McDonald's will be there to discuss what they're thinking about as it relates to regular commodity agriculture. That may be pork production, beef production, poultry production, and commodity corn, grain, soybeans, bean meal that feed into all those livestock systems. Anheuser-Busch, of course, with corn, barley, which we wouldn't be involved with, and a bit of rice. But we'll get an idea of how that might work and what you could do potentially as it goes forward, and how those conditions will change pretty rapidly, I think, over the next several years. We'll include an easy way to think about that with the folks from Clarkson Grain, along with Syngenta. They've got a way to track it, and just one of many, but give you some ideas of what might be possible. We'll also take up farm policy, the farm economy, the price of land, and of course the marketplace. The Farm Assets Conference, great conference, lunch is included, so is the parking in downtown Normal, all for $40. You can buy your tickets right now online at farmassetsconference.com. Don Day is now here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the forecast for the coming week.
Well, pretty good news, really. While we do have a couple of weak systems that may produce a little bit of shower activity over the areas you just mentioned, there's nothing really heavy coming. A lot of the same weather trends that we've enjoyed over the last week, which has finally given us better weather for harvest, is going to continue right on through the weekend. There is a bit of a stronger system that'll come in Saturday night and Sunday for a few more showers, but I think nothing that's going to set us back anymore, and more progress should be made between now and the weekend.
And next week?
Next week is a different ball game. Once we get beyond Monday and Tuesday, I don't think any significant weather Monday and Tuesday is coming our way, but by late Tuesday night and certainly during the day Wednesday into Thursday, we're going to have a pretty strong system come out of the Rockies that will bring areas of rain and in some of those northern areas, a little bit of snow, and that's going to be followed by a secondary push of colder air that's going to arrive late next week and towards next weekend, and there could be a fairly good-sized weather system moving through the Midwest by late next week and the following weekend. So this window of opportunity over the next 5 or 6 days is our best chance for good harvest weather. After that, things get more busy and a bit more unsettled.
Any dividing lines here, east to west or north to south?
No, it's going to pretty much affect everybody. I think the one that gives us the most concern is the secondary system that arrives late next week in terms of more in the way of widespread moisture and also some cold as well.
Hey, thanks, Don. You have a good week. That, of course, is Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium for this Tuesday afternoon. Be safe in the field. I know you're working really hard this week to finish things up. And when you're looking at a forecast that doesn't look so great next week, that becomes problematic. Take some time for yourself and make sure you do get enough rest. It's proven that will help you make it safely through the harvest season. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a very good afternoon.